Welcome to Post Status Draft, the official podcast for Post Status, a website with news and information for WordPress professionals. Today, Joe and I discuss Medium and WordPress, and whether Medium and similar platforms are a significant threat. We also discuss the merits of open source software versus closed platforms, and what WordPress can do to offer a better user experience. If you like this podcast, you can get a lot more quality news and analysis from the Post Status Club multiple times per week. Check out current club members, site partners, and join the club on our website at poststatus.com/club. You'll be joining more than 650 wonderful club members, and you'll never miss important WordPress news again. This week, we come back from a significant break. Both Joe and I were at WordCamp Europe, so this is our first episode, I think, in 3 weeks, and I was on vacation for 2 weeks. So I want to start this week by thanking our sponsor. This week's sponsor is Pippin's Plugins. I think many of my listeners know Pippin Williamson, one of the leaders in the WordPress community. And Pippin's Plugins consists of a number of projects, but he has three mainstays: Easy Digital Downloads, Affiliate WP, and Restrict Content Pro. You can go to pippinsplugins.com to check out each one of these, or you can go to each website individually at restrictcontentpro.com, easydigitaldownloads.com, and affiliatewp.com. All three of these are amazing plugins that I'm sure many of you have used. And one of the best things about any plugin from Pippin's Plugins is that you know that you can start using it and it'll work right out of the box. So if you're ready to restrict content, sell downloads, or set up your affiliate program, go to pippinsplugins.com and find the right solution for you. Thank you to the team at Pippin's Plugins for being a Post Status partner. And as one additional note, check out Pippin's awesome new URL for his personal blog at pippin.com, where you can learn a lot from him and his experience building his business. I'd also like to thank listeners for rating the podcast in iTunes. And this week, I'd specifically like to thank, and I hope I pronounce it right, Shinichi Nishikawa, one of our Japanese listeners who rated the podcast 5 stars and said this is the number one WordPress podcast and thanked Joe and I for what we do, called it easy listening, and said that Post Status Draft helps him deepen his understanding of WordPress. And I really appreciate the review. And Shinichi, I enjoyed being able to see you at WordCamp Europe. So if someone else reviews the podcast, please rate it 5 stars. And if you do, send me a link to the descriptive text and we'll include it in the next show. And with that, let's get on to the main recording of the show. Hey, everybody. I'm Brian, and I'm the editor of Post Status.
And I am Joe, a co-founder and the CTO of HumanMade. And welcome to the Post Status Draft podcast. And today we're going to be discussing Medium and WordPress and whether Medium and similar platforms are a significant threat to WordPress. Yeah, exciting.
So this was a topic that I touched on some in my conversation with Matt Mullenweg at WordCamp Europe.
If you haven't seen it, WordPress.tv.
Yeah, it's on there.
Right at the top.
Right at the top for now. But it was a lot of fun getting to interview Matt and hang out with all of my European friends, many for the first time. I felt like a larger portion than I thought worked for HumanMade. <'Cause> one day I was asking somebody what their plans were for that night, and I was actually going back for dinner with my wife, and they're like, "Oh yeah, we're going to dinner." And I thought about it, and I was like, "Well, that's like 3/4 of my European friends that I normally talk to, and they all work for y'all, and y'all were having a company dinner."
We just have a policy of hiring your friends.
That's all. Yeah, I think that's it. No, WordCamp Europe was a lot of fun though, and you, I think you had probably, aside from the interview I did with Matt, I felt like you had probably the most jam-packed talk, the double session on the REST API.
Oh, you think so? Was it pretty? I don't have good insight into that. I kind of like came off the end of my session. I didn't really have a clue how well it had gone or anything, but the feedback was pretty good and it seemed pretty full room. So
it went really well, and the room was packed. And you had some nice swagger about you during that talk. I got a couple of good pictures, and then my favorite was David Bissett was doing these little animated GIFs from the live stream, and one of them's of you just being going like, you know, sup.
I do actually I do remember that, seeing those on Twitter. Funny little GIFs.
Yeah. So anyway, enough about WordCamp Europe, but that's the I guess some of the source of where this conversation comes from, Medium versus WordPress or whatever we want to call it. Also, there was an article, maybe two articles worth referencing that kind of go alongside this. One is recent from the end of June. Mark Armstrong, who works at Automattic, he's also the founder of Longreads. He published a post that said what to consider when the platforms show up with money. And I actually didn't realize his post starts with the reference to the same article that I asked Matt about. But it was about how five publishers were wooed over to Medium, most of them from WordPress. And, you know, there's a couple of pretty damning quotes for WordPress. One of the publishers called WordPress a disaster. And generally, it seemed like the consensus was that Medium was making some of the challenges of publishing significantly simpler for these people. So I asked Matt about it, and he responded fairly strongly. And, you know, this isn't necessarily to talk about Matt's responses so much while he's not here, much as I'd like us to discuss what we think in terms of Medium's threat to WordPress and whether it is really a threat, and maybe just kind of what some of the things that we can learn, because obviously Medium's doing some things well.
Yeah, I think I think that was kind of my takeaway from the Q&A you did when, you know, the topic of Medium came up, and I think it was a little too bashed down. There's clearly things about Medium that are better than WordPress, I think, you know, in plenty of regards. And it's a good thing to kind of look at that and try and incorporate it and learn from it and, you know, make WordPress better because of that, rather than, ignoring it, I guess, in fear of like calling it out as potentially a better platform.
So before we get into the politics and the difference of a proprietary model and all those types of things, let's just talk about, I guess, what we think Medium is doing right in terms of the editing experience and, you know, support for publishers, that kind of thing. So are you fairly familiar with Medium, or is it mostly as a reader?
Day to day, it's as a reader. Like, I don't have a blog or I don't write on Medium, really. It's, you know, most of my experience from the editing side has been just editing other people's things. So I have a fairly light kind of level of experience there. For reading, I think it's great. That's for a lot of the things that come with having a platform that's controlled and consistent, rather than, you know, landing on some random WordPress website and you can either have a really good experience or a really bad one there. So obviously there's going to be a lot of apples and oranges comparisons here. But as the kind of editing experience goes, purely the text editor, you know, in terms of writing, I think it's pretty clear that's a very nice, clean, polished, robust experience, right? And I don't know if we could quite say the same thing about WordPress.
So,
what are your thoughts on those two?
I think from a reading experience perspective, it's clear that Medium hit on something several years ago, and they've iterated it quite a bit since then. And obviously, WordPress site owners were hungry for something similar because it's been cloned many, many times. Yeah. I think human-made partner, even, Noel Talk, has a little WordPress theme where his whole intent was to mimic the general layout and design of Medium, and I think the reading experience on Medium is great. I've written a few articles on Medium, and I've also gone through the process of creating a publication. So now you can have your own custom domain, you can have a publication with a name, you can even create like a drag and drop layout. So you can say, I want one article up top, and then three columns, and then four columns, and then one column, however you want to do that. And even that perspective of publishing, like beyond the article publishing, is, in my opinion, pretty darn good. I think if someone wants to get a publication up and running, you can do it on Medium pretty quickly. And it looks good. You know, I think it's actually probably a little bit better of an experience. It's not perfect, but it's a little bit better of an experience, I think, than, say, installing WordPress and trying to choose from 10,000 themes. I think the choice of choosing a theme and installing WordPress and getting configured on WordPress could be better than or could be as good as the one on Medium, but you'd have to start from a more curated experience. You know, like Matt mentioned this, like he thinks hosts should be more active in terms of that onboarding user experience and stuff, and I think that could go a long way. But default WordPress is not near as good of an experience as Medium is as far as getting your publication up and running.
I guess Medium has been coming it from the position of it started out with content first and just a way to, you know, throw an article up and write it, and that's kind of it. And it's slowly moving more into the CMS side of things, I guess, whereas WordPress, I see, has been a little bit opposite to that. You know, you've got really... starting out with the building blocks of a CMS, and then we're kind of like trying to make the writing experience better. But I think that core writing experience that Medium was so good for is something that WordPress has always been trying like to move towards. So they're starting at different places, but there's definitely, you know, becoming quite a lot of overlap now, which is why I think it prompts things like this conversation, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, even since the last time I looked at creating a layout on Medium, it's even more significant now. Like I can add my own little header color. I can choose like what size I want the header to be, if I want title and logo. It's kind of similar to the customizer experience on WordPress, but a little more intuitive. And it flows on down through the page. So it's like you can choose a grid or a stream or a list layout of your articles. It's impressive, you know. It's not something I think we should scoff at, for sure. And I don't think
absolutely not. Right. The question for me is whether, I don't know, I guess at the top level, when you're comparing something like WordPress to me is just a tool that you can do a lot of different things with. One of them is creating some kind of experience like Medium. So when you're comparing WordPress to a proprietary platform or product, a little bit like you would with Tumblr or something like that, you're having to, like, the set of requirements for this comparison are coming from Medium. They're not coming from WordPress. So WordPress can kind of like fit in to provide something that Medium have created, like the same feature set and that kind of thing. But we can't really do the comparison the other way around. Start with something you could build in WordPress and then say, well, how could you do this in Medium? Like, I can't take Nomad Base that's been built in WordPress and say, okay, well, how does Medium work for this? Because it just doesn't fit into that. So there's definitely a lot of things that Medium is doing better for the Medium type experience that WordPress can do those. And I think WordPress can learn a lot. But in terms of tangibly, how can it actually adapt those things when it's used so broadly for different use cases as well? Like if I was going to build something like Medium, you could take WordPress as a starting point and build a Medium-like experience on top of WordPress for that. So I guess I'm not sure if it's WordPress's job to outperform Medium at what Medium has created for itself.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, Medium is definitely geared towards publication, you know, like our stream-driven publications. Like I don't think anybody in their right mind would say, let's go build a business website or an application like Nomad Base.
Right, sure.
So it's Medium. Yeah. It's like if we're saying we're subjugating Medium to its niche of streams, or maybe to the extent of like news-based publications, and we're saying, you know, we're questioning whether it's a proper replacement of WordPress. And I think
So like, given that criteria, I guess, of the features that you need to achieve that kind of workflow where you're publishing content that is, I guess, typically original on Medium, then how are these two platforms opposed in that regard?
Mm-hmm. And the reason I actually like the example of theringer.com is because it's basically the same staff or similar staff that was on Grantland, and that was a WordPress VIP site run by Bill Simmons, who's a popular sports pundit, I guess, in the U.S. And he broke up with ESPN. The Grantland shut down, and he started The Ringer, and now Medium's the central hub for it. And Matt's argument was that, you know, one, there's a lack of flexibility, but also both Mark Armstrong and Matt insinuated that Medium's paying publishers to be on Medium. They're definitely paying the development costs for, like, the custom features that they build for prominent publications. But I think overall, if you look at, like, what The Ringer gets out of Medium as a platform, it's pretty appealing, you know. People that are already involved in the Medium environment, the network effect of Medium plays well into it. Like, I follow The Ringer, so I get emails about The Ringer. And, you know, there's a lot of good there. And I think that's hard for WordPress to mimic, but it's not impossible for WordPress.com to mimic. I feel like WordPress.com and VIP in particular, like, it doesn't necessarily say, like, we are a network of VIP WordPress websites and we're going to help people discover amongst these, whereas Medium definitely plays a stronger role in the overall brand of these websites. Do you think that's a positive thing or a negative?
I would say that it's a negative, but I'm just coming from the perspective of, like, I don't know, these kind of big brands usually want their own thing. Like, they typically, you know, for something like their own site, aren't looking to kind of piggyback off of another brand. They're not going to have their whole site be a Facebook page or something like that. So I think, you know, Medium is clearly accepted that they'll be pushed a little bit to the background, though there's some present, but, you know, they've got the custom domain on top of that. You can brand it your own way with your colors and things like that. So I think, you know, Medium have definitely given up a fair amount of that brand space compared to what they have on just when people are writing their personal stuff on Medium.
Would you, I mean, you mentioned Facebook, would you go as far to say Medium is Facebook-ish in terms of its, like, a closed network?
It's definitely not that extreme, but I think there is some kind of continuum there, right, between own everything yourself and your Facebook page. And we haven't got to a point where at least many brands are, like, willing to dive into, like, solely only having a Facebook page. And
so maybe if you compare it to 10 years ago when Facebook was basically a profile and a wall, right now, Medium's a feed for articles, but 10 years from now, maybe they would look a little more similar.
It could go in that direction. I don't totally know what their kind of longer-term strategy is, whether it is to leverage the network that they have much more. I'd say that if they're kind of, you know, fairly recently pursuing larger brands for them to use Medium as their actual website, then that is, to me, kind of says that that's what they're more interested in, rather than creating a kind of cohesive social network, like something, you know, more on the Facebook spectrum, I guess. It seems they're more interested in, you know, taking the big brands away from WordPress and you know, whatever other proprietary.
Have you heard the term platisher?
I have not.
It's an unfortunate word.
I'm trying to work out what that could mean.
It's based on the debate of whether Medium is a platform or a publisher.
Oh, right.
People have come up with the compromise of platisher.
That's not a good coin.
No. I don't know how you reverse those words. I'm not thinking well enough yet today. But yeah, I mean, I guess we got a little into the platform element before, and skipped mostly over the editing experience. Was it because we just both agree so strongly that the publishing experience on Medium is pretty darn good? And
I mean,
is probably beating WordPress in that regard?
I think, like, it. Okay, so it is. Like, if you just install WordPress and you're going to write something, it's not as nice. I don't think, like, those two default experiences, when we're restricting ourselves to, you know, all the prerequisites of, like, we're making a publishing website that's just a list of articles and it's simple kind of thing, I don't think you could argue that the Medium, like, core editing experience is worse than WordPress. I think like WordPress is much more lacking.
As a user experience for someone non-technical.
Yeah, even just like robustness of the editor. Like,
yeah,
TinyMCE is very good compared to other content editable editors out there.
Editors in the box.
Right, exactly. But you can still create a huge amount of problems there. As soon as I'm looking over the shoulder of somebody that hasn't used it before and they're doing stuff like trying to drag images around and put, you know, text to the right of them and things like that, it's just getting like really pretty difficult to use off the bat. Whereas this is something that Medium has tackled from the ground up, you know, really rethinking how it works from the technical side as well to make it as robust and predictable as possible. Like I think that's one of the big problems of the WordPress editor is it's really not predictable, both in terms of actual WYSIWYG, but even editor behavior when you're going to drag and drop something somewhere, like you don't always know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I think Medium has pretty fully embraced the content block concept. I got into this part with Matt, too, where I kind of talked about three separate ideas of publishing that WordPress has explored all three. One being the customizer. This is in addition to TinyMCE. One being the customizer where you're editing essentially in a pane and seeing it on the front end, so like a side-by-side. And that's probably a decent comparison to something like Ghost as well, like where you're writing in Markdown on one side and you see the result on the other.
Mm-hmm.
Secondary concept would be front-end publishing, where you're literally, you know, seeing what the end result would look like. And the third being this concept of content blocks of sorts, where it's more chunks of content, so you could flow between text and media and text mm-hmm. and audio or whatever, like different types of media, galleries, who knows what. But it's more of this flow, and your content is not one block with like inserts, but each block is like plus button, I want to add a video, plus button, I want to add text. They actually have it into four different things. I want to embed something from somewhere else, you know, like. And I think Medium has a really powerful content block concept going.
What I like a lot about that is it's a little abstracted for the user, so they don't really feel like they're like chunking blocks. Like, you know, like you click plus and you rearrange a block and stuff like that. It's built into the natural kind of like typing. Like it feels like everything's just one, you know, for a non-tech savvy user, one just kind of Word document page, right, where you can move things around and mm-hmm. you're not feeling like you're chunking together building blocks, which is, I think, where a lot of the kind of page editors have gone wrong in that kind of rigidity approach. But under the hood, then, yeah, Medium is like got this concept of blocks of different types, and you insert those, and it's much more predictable for previewing and rendering and all of that kind of thing because of that. But the user experience of it, I think they've done a good job of keeping that still feeling like you're typing out a page rather than compiling blocks together, if you kind of see what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So on the WordPress side, I definitely see I see the future on the WordPress side of being, you know, still having that primary kind of editor, as it were, text editor, but then incorporating media within that a little bit like you do now with the shortcut previews. Though I just think a lot of that could have a nice user experience on top of it in terms of how to insert and edit different media and blocks and things like that. But I think the that general concept I'm on board with, the kind of like completely front-end one, has conceptual problems that I still don't understand that there are solutions to, primarily around like how you want to edit something isn't related to actually how it displays.
Yeah.
And then also editing regardless of the context that it's shown in is quite a big problem as well. Because it makes
what do you
think
mean by
like
that?
So that would be like, if I'm writing an article on mobile, presumably my front-end experience is just like writing on mobile, but I don't know how that's going to appear on the desktop or vice versa, like all different media. When I read it on the desktop, then because I'm in a completely, you know, WYSIWYG experience and I'm writing it on the website, then it's not obvious because you're not writing your content irregardless of the context that it's displayed in. Then essentially you're kind of making promises about what it looks like, but then the web doesn't quite work that way now in terms of it showing different on different devices. So that's why I kind of see the idea of the, I still think that it's necessary to have a separate editing experience where you're editing content in a more view agnostic way rather than in place on the front end of your website, because you need that separation between content and presentation to be able to use that content, you know, in different places. You can't really say, if you're writing your text and you have a little ad on the right hand side, you can't say in your text, just check out the ad on the right hand side here, you know, whereas if you're editing in that experience where you've got the ad already shown the right hand side, a non-tech savvy user just kind of presumes they can do that, but they can't do that because that content is not within the context of actually where they're editing it. I guess I'm probably repeating myself a few times there.
No, I think I'm with you. It's interesting to me because the editing experience on Medium, it definitely feels like some form of admin, but it's not super admin like.
Right.
It's very subtle because it's outside the typical box of what you feel like when you're editing in WordPress. Like the cruft gets out of the way, all the junk you don't need, all the settings you don't need is gone. But you don't have this fear like, oh, this is like a live article and I'm editing it on the spot. So you know you're editing, but it doesn't feel bad. You know, like it doesn't feel unchangeable.
Right, exactly. I think they've done a really nice job with that. I think that's kind of like one of the best things that would encourage me, I think, to write. Like the Medium experience is so much nicer than log into your dashboard, and it's like you're using, it's almost like compared to like using Windows application from Windows 98 or something, where it's all around, like you've got all of this UI everywhere, you've got to find the box to type in all of this. Whereas if you use much more modern slick UIs, you're not having to there's much more abstraction between the user experience and how like all of the data works under the hood. WordPress really, I think, it's still too stuck in the, like, it's just like a database editor. Whereas Medium is going for the, you know, let's create a user experience that's focused around writing and actually doing what you want to do. And we'll kind of like hide how we're storing all of these content blocks under the hood and how all of the, you know, objects are stored in the database and things like that, rather than the, you know, more direct approach that WordPress has.
So, for example, WordPress kind of has tried to iterate towards this a little bit with the distraction-free editing. And a lot of people find it actually a little bit distracting where, you know, the left side and the right side, they like slide out while you're typing. And I guess it kind of depends on the type of content you're focusing on. Because if you're writing a blog post, and I mean, I'm sitting here in the editor right now, once the sides go away, I mean, WordPress isn't great, but it's not awful in the tiny MCE context, and it's just gray everywhere else. But that's not a great scenario if you're doing mostly non-content driven content, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, like, I mean, that's the problem with us trying to compare WordPress to something like Medium, is it?
Yeah.
We have plenty of clients where, you know, maybe they've got 100 words in the quote content, but and then there's like a bunch of other things that they've got to fill out that is quite meta, right? How does it look on Facebook? What is the title there? What are the different share images? What are these different custom fields that are specific to this? There's all of this other metadata. That's another reason why I don't really agree with the front end editing thing, because a lot of stuff
how do you actually have to edit,
right, isn't part of what you're seeing on the screen. That aside, and kind of like discarding use cases for WordPress that aren't directly comparable to Medium, I think the WordPress editor itself is lacking in that regard. But you're right, a lot of content these days, and I think even for bigger publishers, has more and more metadata associated with it, and that's why, like, there's maybe a few cases of brands moving over to Medium. But when I think right now of the actual data, the data that something like News International has on a lot of their properties, a huge amount of metadata that's syndicated to so many different devices and displayed in so many different ways. Really what WordPress for them is just like a repository for all of their content that is sent to different places. So though they have the concept is quite similar to the Ringer, right? Just in terms of, you know, it's a bunch of articles with text and images and media within those. Just based off how broadly you're actually planning to use that data is really going to be very restrictive. If, you know, you write on Medium to display it on Medium, you don't write on Medium to build a content archive and power your news organization with it yet. Anyway,
that's a, I mean, maybe you do. I mean, I guess I'm pretty sure one of the things in the Neiman Lab post about those publishers is Medium has been building out integrations for instant articles and AMP and stuff like that that just works. And, you know, obviously WordPress, there are solutions for that too. I know y'all have been building them out for people. But the Medium as your central API has got to be one of their goals. You know, similar to what we're trying to do with WordPress, you know, like with the REST API, it's like it allows WordPress to be a powerful central part of your network so that hopefully big publishers would be able to, you know, make their bets with WordPress as the center of their technology stack.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely the area where I would worry more about Medium getting into is them being them wanting to be the I guess, you know,
the home base.
Yeah, the canonical source for all of the content kind of thing. And the displaying on Medium is one of the things that they do. But yeah, like you say, they also do instant articles. Maybe they can also expose it in a feed that you can use in mobile applications, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. That's where I think WordPress has still got that, just because you control it and you can do anything with it. Medium is kind of... When you're building something so specifically fit for purpose, it knows what its goals are and where it's headed and what features it needs to serve the publishing industry specifically. Given enough resources, then given that they actually know what they're focusing on, then I'm worried for WordPress in that regard, because WordPress has very little direction in terms of what it's actually trying to be. So how can it outperform a team with a significant amount of resources to go after one niche, whereas WordPress is kind of like incidentally addressing those niches right now, all you know, hundreds of different niches, but it's not driven really in any direction for it to outperform somebody kind of directly addressing that niche. But that's kind of a general problem I kind of see with WordPress is it doesn't have specific goals or targets really improve along that.
Do you think that the WordPress admin can take some good components of Medium's interface, like their admin interface, to where you still have kind of the power of the flexibility you get in WordPress and say, you know, metadata and whatever, all these things that you do on a post or some type, some content type in WordPress, but at the same time, figure out a better way to kind of hide some of the junk that you don't need on a particular page view into the background.
Quite superficially, I'd say it could. I think Medium has, I don't know. Well, I don't know. I'm probably going to be unfair by saying this, but I guess there is. Medium can take quite strong design cues for what it wants to do, whereas WordPress can't. So it's not that WordPress doesn't have like good designers to work on it. It's just like you can't be that opinionated in terms of stripping out the cruft or you know, creating a much stronger hierarchy of the UI that makes something like Medium seem very simple to use. They know that which features are the primary features for their audience to use. Whereas on WordPress, some people are using different parts and some are using others as their kind of like primary focus of that editing experience. So it's quite difficult, I think, then to have just to end up getting a product where you're like, wow, this is like really nice to use. And it's really in flow with how I want to write, because people are just writing with it in so many different ways. So really I see the longer term solution for this. I think, you know, Matt has talked about it, is having different admin or editor experiences, hopefully built on the REST API, that are much more driving specific publishing needs or workflows, or you know, more broad than, I guess, content publishing, but for just content management, having different ones for that. I think right now we've got one monolithic approach in the WordPress admin, and you know, maybe we can take a couple of cues from Medium, because some things are just better. Like their editor is just clearly more robust than TinyMC. So that's like one thing that maybe you could just like switch in, and I don't know, I'm sure there's more complication to what I'm saying here to doing that. But there are some specifics like that. But I think just broadly speaking, like the problem of having one monolithic admin to try and service every possible use case for it, is you're never going to get the very nice to use experiences that really like encourage you to feel, or to make you feel motivated to write. Like when I log into Medium, I just like want to write something because it's all really nicely designed, and I want to like to be able to use all of that. When I log into WordPress, I don't feel that way. Not because it's not well designed, just because it's not specific enough, I think, in any area. So maybe we can just create different writing or management experiences for those different niches. So yay, REST API.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I think it's a struggle, I guess, that any app has. The one that's coming to mind right now is like, take Basecamp for instance. You know, it's essentially a CMS for project management. Mm-hmm. I don't think WordPress is doing a very good job of hiding things in a particular page view that aren't necessary for the actions that you may take on that page view. So one page view of the WordPress admin is writing a post or adding a testimonial or whatever that thing is. And that's kind of the reason I'm comparing it to Basecamp right now, because take a project management app like Basecamp, you might have the task, you know, you might have a to-do list thing, and then you're adding a task to it that has a checkbox, and you know, there's a lot going on there, but Basecamp kind of hides all the other crap that you can do within Basecamp while you're in that view. Whereas WordPress makes pretty much anything you can do in WordPress one click away.
Right.
So if I'm writing a post, and I can just as easily like go and see my WooCommerce orders from that same view. Like it doesn't get that stuff out of the way.
So I have a theory and potential solution to this.
Sure.
So I think the reason why WordPress is like this, you know, you click edit post, and yeah, it's a unfathomable amount of stuff that you're presented with.
It's like 75 links on any page.
Right. And one of my ideas for this, or why it's like this, is because WordPress was built, 10 years ago, and it's built as a, click, reload the page, everything takes, 2 seconds. So there's a massive cognitive overhead of like switching the screen in the WordPress admin in terms of the amount of time. So like, because of that, then we've just decided to like shove loads of stuff on one page at a time.
So you only have to click once.
Right. But if you instead imagine that, let's say the whole admin was just a JavaScript application that loaded once, and it's essentially instant when you click edit post to being in that edit post experience, or it's instant that like you click edit and then you're just only presented with the editor or something like that, boom, full screen kind of thing like Medium. And then you can easily load in all of your different metadata from different areas when you click it, and it's all very fast because of that. People like don't really mind clicking too much if it's really quick. What they don't like doing is like clicking between pages in the admin, and it takes 3 seconds to load for every one of them. So maybe if we can make WordPress more of an application in that regard, where things are actually super quick, and therefore users don't feel, you know, like it's a long process, though they've technically got to go through, you know, 4 screens to get somewhere, when those are instant clicks, then I don't think that's actually too bad. So maybe that could help.
Yeah, you know, you make a good point, and obviously I hadn't thought about it yet, but Calypso, WordPress.com's new editor, does make a significant attempt at this. So when you go into writing a post on WordPress.com, you actually do get a medium-ish view of the post area. So it kind of unbounds the boxes. Like on WordPress, a typical WordPress admin, you get all the meta boxes, the publish boxes, all those other enclosed boxes, whereas on WordPress.com it says title, and then you see the tiny MCE bar still, but it's cleaner, and then it's like, boom, your content. So you're still content. It's not like plus button, insert an image now. It's still, it relies on tiny MCE, but it's much simpler than WordPress itself. And just as importantly, you have post actions that are still visible in this view. So you have, you know, publish or draft, categories, featured image, some additional options for, you know, like excerpt and stuff. But each of those is in their own tab that it requires like an accordion click. But the rest of your WordPress.com admin goes away, and you actually have to press back to get to other admin you know, functions. And yeah, I think they obviously took a lesson from what other single page applications are doing. And I think you make a great point that that could certainly be a future for the WordPress admin. And it's one of my biggest beefs. There's just so much going on a particular, any given admin page that, to me, that's partly what makes the medium experience of writing a post quite nice.
I mean, I think that the, like WordPress.com is obviously a lot closer to Medium to than what WordPress is itself. I think in terms of the Calypso stuff is a great example, I guess, of like what you could technically do with WordPress to get something more like a Medium experience. Like, I'm surprised Matt was as kind of dismissive as he was of Medium's publishing experience as opposed to WordPress, when he's, you know, not personally, but his company has funded the overhaul of their whole admin to get something which is a nicer, right? Yeah, or a nicer publishing experience than WordPress, right? That's the whole idea, is that it's an improvement to do the I just want to write my content kind of use case.
Yeah, and so. I did ask him explicitly whether he thought WordPress's publishing experience was better than Medium's, and I think his answer was absolutely. Maybe I should have qualified. Did he mean was .com's better than Medium's or .org's? Because .com's is considerably more Medium-like than WordPress.org-like, in my opinion. Maybe he did offer to come back on the podcast in addition to the interview. So we should have him on and talk more about this. But yeah. I certainly think we can take some notes both from .com or Calypso's editor and Medium to improve the WordPress editing experience. I think the challenge is, like you said, to maintain WordPress's ability to be powerful and manage all these scenarios that it could possibly be used.
I think the single page
component is important there.
Yeah, like I see that being a nice evolution of the WordPress admin. Like it's got to go in that direction. It can't be this ginormous PHP HTML driven, you know, thing forever. It's just, you know, it's not going to work. The question is that replaced by evolution of the WordPress admin to becoming more JavaScript heavy and single page application style? Or do we see a kind of fresh ground up, different, more specific editing experiences? I guess, like, let's say we have the Calypso one. Let's just presume that Calypso was created to be used with WordPress itself, and that was one admin that you could use. And let's say there's also somebody else creates one that's geared around just only managing content when you're using WordPress as a repository of different content, but you're not really authoring content there. So it's all around the, you know, taxonomy of that data and everything. Like, do you see it going as like leapfrogging to that stage, I guess, of having completely different admin products almost? Or do you think, like, realistically, we're going to be just evolving on the WordPress monolithic admin?
I've had some clarification of my own thoughts on this over the past couple of months, because I think it depends on the complexity of the end site. I think if it's a niche application where someone's created a hosted experience, then let's take the former iteration of Happy Tables, for example, a restaurant website builder. You have there are complex components to that, but it's a simple website that's you're going to end up with, and it's very structured content. So I think we'll find different admins when people can make more decisions on behalf of the website owners that they're working with or that they're creating an experience for. So I think if you're creating restaurant websites, then you can be more opinionated and customize the admin to take away some of the stuff in WordPress. But I think for complex websites and custom application websites, you know, like take a big publisher, for example, or just a big corporate website or something, the current admin is WordPress's big advantage that people so often talk about. But it's big advantage in comparison to like Drupal and Joomla, not in comparison to Medium. And I still think the threat to WordPress, even in that regard, is less in that situation. So like a big complex website, the threat is not so much how pretty is the admin, but how functional and how fast is it. In either scenario, going to a single page application and figuring out ways to make the admin speedy are two extremely important things. I think the overall design for complex and heavy users of WordPress is not so bad. You know, like that's one of the things that people applaud about WordPress is it's a better admin experience for complex applications. But it's that doesn't make it a good admin experience for niche or, you know, everyday blogger applications. And I think that goes into why other platforms have found success when they have easier publishing experiences, whether it's Medium or Tumblr before it, or, you know, even something like Twitter, or say, I was just put it in a Facebook note, you know. I think if writing your blog post or doing these simpler applications were faster and better on WordPress, then people might go towards WordPress more.
I mean, one other way I see WordPress not losing out, I guess, is for it to like go more in the direction of being a tool and a framework that is at a lower level that other people are building things on top of, potentially still in a, you know, self-hosted kind of way.
The operating system of the web.
Matt likes to say, I see it being more stable in that kind of that space, I guess, because it doesn't have the problem of serving niches in the same way. And that's kind of like why I really most of the stuff I focus on for WordPress is really to do with you know, it being a solid foundation to build other experiences on top of. If it can be the go-to tool there, then that's the only way that I really see WordPress getting to 50% of the web, isn't with it being a single product that people just use as it is, you know, broadly speaking, with a few plugins on top of it. It needs to be lower level than that people are building much more specific niche things on top of.
In that scenario, then, choosing which admin style you want is basically part of the new site experience then. So
yeah, or whatever might be coupled with WordPress, I guess, to provide that other experience. So like let's say Medium didn't exist yet and WordPress is this really solid foundation that you can need to build something on top of if you want a really good experience in one specific niche, then I'd see Medium being built on top of WordPress to build that experience. So rather than those two then competing, then WordPress is just the you know, common thing that's used throughout all of these different managing experiences, I guess.
I certainly think that would be a good future for WordPress, and it would also be If WordPress continues to evolve and get better, it would make for a good solution for people building those types of platforms. Because if WordPress could make itself easy enough to say, or to where an entrepreneur would say, you know what, I'm not going to waste my time doing all my own stuff. I'm going to use WordPress as the basis because I get all these things for free and because I have the flexibility of creating this publishing experience the way that I want it to be. So in that case, you're almost treating an admin experience like you would a plugin or something.
We think of a website now as being the visual end that the user is seeing, but really the things that we're building are less becoming just the viewing side, right? It's also incorporating some type of management there when we're comparing to things like Calypso and Medium and Tumblr and even Twitter and things like that. The whole front to back end, I guess, is part of your product. So it's not just the front end website that you're making anymore. So because of that, then I kind of see it going in the more of the direction that, yeah, some entrepreneur wants to build something. Instead of just building a website, now they're building the whole lot, essentially.
So who would you say would be responsible for creating those type of admin experiences? Would it be a third party that says, hey, this is our vision of an admin experience and Core is just supporting those types of supporting the ability to do those implementations? Or do you think there is a scenario where WordPress Core itself could ship with two or three different, publishing styles essentially on the back end?
Yeah, I'm not totally sure. Like, I could see, like, one extreme I could see is that people don't see WordPress, the label, anymore. So they're actually, there is, a new product that uses
Jetpack.
WordPress. But yeah, okay, let's take Jetpack. So let's say there is now a piece of software that people just download and it's called Jetpack. And let's just say that is the Calypso admin, right?
Mm-hmm. But it's nobody, for blogs.
Right. In a similar way that people are using web server software that they don't really know what is under the hood, or even the language that the tool is written on and all of the tooling that comes with. Maybe WordPress,
Linux.
Right. Maybe WordPress will go that far back that the end user isn't really that aware of it, which I think on a lot of hosted tools is already the case, right? People are moving away from it being a WordPress powered thing and it's just their new product. So maybe it can go in that regard where we've got, a bunch of different either open source projects, potentially, companies just building their own product on top of it kind of direction. If WordPress is instead going to be the thing that the end user or, in terms of the person that is owns the website or writing on it is still going to be aware of this WordPress thing, then, yeah, it's going to be a bit more of a tricky model around education of like, I'm using WordPress with X, Y, or Z, because that's a very different experience. And we can't really, people that both say that they're using WordPress can't really compare themselves in the same way that they can right now, where they typically kind of have the same experiences for things. But though I guess we have that problem with WordPress.com and WordPress self-hosted at the moment. I would see like the ideally there to be other community projects that are doing custom admin experiences or different use cases.
Well, your mobile app from your talk, Vienna, could be something like that, right? I mean,
yeah, like that. That's one example, I guess. Where, like, initially, I think what I demoed in Vienna, in Vienna for the app Vienna, is
well,
really just.
Hold on, let's back up for a second. Joe introduced a sample React Native driven mobile app that could be an interface for a WordPress website from an iOS viewpoint. He did it right in Vienna, Austria, and he called the app Vienna. So yeah, context for everybody.
Okay, so this is kind of like started off as just a simple CRUD interface, I guess, on your WordPress stuff. But the more I kind of like play around and think of it, the more opportunity there is to provide a different type of experience compared to just, I can just edit my post and update my metadata or whatever. When you're on the phone, then you can do great stuff around media. You can have completely different publishing flows for uploading photos to your site or uploading mm-hmm. videos and all of that kind of thing, or how you can integrate notifications and how that works, or commenting and all that kind of stuff. Like you can create really different experiences on top of the WordPress models and it, you know, showing it on a website. So Vienna is an app that maybe could go in that direction of not being just a, replication of the WordPress admin currently, but instead providing a very different experience. And I see there being lots of different different experiences that you could create the more diversely WordPress is used to build very different things. So most of my kind of interest in WordPress comes from using it to build something like Medium, or maybe you could build, you know, to build something like Snapchat or something like that. And really that's, you know, why the REST API is a project that I'm super passionate about is because it really just allows you to use WordPress at a much lower level to build all those completely different types of things. But I guess if you're just, you know, looking to write a post better than that stuff, probably isn't very interesting.
I know this is a weird potential use case, but have you ever heard of Telegram, the messaging app?
Yeah. I mean, used it.
Oh, okay. So like in your scenario, you could even build something like Telegram on WordPress, because a lot of the stuff Telegram does is, essentially could be mirrored on a WordPress data store.
Right. Yeah, it's funny you should say that, because I'm actually building some...
Like, if you invited your friends or your family, whoever you want to be in this private network of sorts, to communicate with you via the Vienna app, then essentially Vienna could be your own little, you know, messaging hub if you built all the right functionality into it.
Right. So, like, I think we're getting to the point where I think people are becoming aware that they can use WordPress in these completely different ways of being much more of a framework. The question is, like, how right now that's got to be super low level. You've got to build a huge amount of stuff yourself to use WordPress in the way that we have for Nomad Base, for example. So the question for me is, like, can we take some of those use cases and make much more broader products out of them for other people to use? Right now it's kind of take it and build it for your specific need case. But could there be an admin that is suited to something like location-based stuff, or something that Nomad Base is kind of built on the concept of? And I'm not totally sure what that would look like, I guess. I'm just interested as to whether, like, how different can we make the editing experiences for WordPress sites in such a way that there's still a big enough market for somebody to use one that is completely geared around media management and editing media and posting it and things like that, rather than us all just kind of like creating our own niche private code, you know, to run on our SaaSes.
So would WordPress begin to look more like Laravel in that type of scenario?
I guess so, yeah. Ultimately, that's kind of...
Because Laravel doesn't, you know, it doesn't force you into any administrative...
Right, it's really purely a framework for you to kind of use what you want there. So I don't know if WordPress would need to become kind of so out of... so kind of agnostic, I guess, of like,
I mean, Laravel's completely agnostic. Like, even finding good admins on Laravel is pretty hard, that I know of, at least.
Right. So I still, it's difficult to say, because a lot of the stuff that I do, like, I could probably just use Laravel, but I find the whole WordPress ecosystem to be really helpful in that regard. So I don't think it would be wrong if WordPress were to much more, it kind of maybe, you know, to become that kind of a low-level framework. But I think WordPress is coming at it from the user-first experience kind of part, so maybe it could hold on to its idea of focusing on the experience from the user's perspective. It's just, I think we're going to need more of those, really, if WordPress is going to compete in niches. And whether yeah, whether that's from the WordPress core project or not, I don't think so. I kind of think probably not. Like, it would be great to have the WordPress core team that is just focused on, you know, as it were, the code. And then what we have now with the WordPress, like the UI team, but focused on the WordPress admin, that, you know, that team focusing on the admin as one of lots of other potential experiences which you have different teams on. Is maybe one way to see it working, but I'm kind of talking off the top of my head. So,
no, I mean, I think I'm with you. I guess I think it's worth finishing on the concept of proprietary CMSs versus open source, and just asking. I mean, obviously, we find the concept of open source and everything, all the flexibility and power that you have with WordPress, to be important. Do you think the general public does? Like, to me, it's not so surprising for a bunch of people with their blogs, whether it's any platform that's not WordPress, to be using proprietary platforms. But it's a little surprising to see like big publishers going all in on a platform like Medium that's proprietary.
Yeah, though I'm not sure how new that is. Like, if you compare it to the proprietary CMSs, I guess they've kind of been doing that. So it's those agreements typically do have more flexibility in them in terms of,
you know, and the it's usually the publisher that's essentially owning the content and they're licensing the technology.
Yeah, so from a technology point of view, maybe there's not a big difference between proprietary there, but you're right that, you know, I don't know, it's quite often a self-hosted version where they literally own, you know, the servers that are having their content on and it's being authored, so they definitely have a lot more ownership over that.
Yeah, something about me just doesn't freak out as much. I mean, I'm a little worried about it, but I'm not freaking out because publishers go to Medium. Like, I would freak out if publishers said, we don't have a website, we just have a Facebook page. Like, that's the type of thing that makes right. me just want to throw things at the wall. But for some reason, I don't do that with Medium.
Right. Looking at the trend, for kind of like better or worse, I think that publishers are trending in the direction of not caring so much about ownership of content and owning the experience and things like that. It seems a more, frankly, kind of old hat thing to want to own your stuff. And, you know, with the much more trend towards content being a lot more temporary and served from a lot of different places, Facebook instant articles, Facebook doing stuff with people's content that's out of their control. Like, I think people are learning to give up more and more control over the content that they create and are seeing it in a bit of a different way, where it's not like your archive of content is seen as such this kind of like valuable thing that you're building, but it's more the social audience that you're building around that, and those, you know, that kind of thing, where people are being driven by the traffic that is now, not the you know, amount of content they're building over time they supposedly own. So I just kind of feel like the focus on ownership of content is reducing, rather than it being seen as like this tangible asset that companies are creating.
It essentially assigns no historical value to the content itself.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, that's kind of like where I'm going with that.
I have two polar opposite examples of this. One, is there any clearer sign of that? And to me, it's worrying than, say, like Snapchat. To me, the mere concept of, hey, this is going to disappear in 24 hours, you'll never see it again, bothers the crap out of me about Snapchat. I mean, I'm hesitant to ever use something like Snapchat because I hate the fact that you have to like press a particular button to say, add this to my permanent archive or whatever.
Right.
And I still don't even know if it's permanent. Snapchat's kind of beyond me.
But that's only permanent for you. Nobody, it's not permanent for anybody else. So anything you create is...
Yeah. So like there's very little historical record of some, you know, what's becoming popular now, like Snapchat and other messaging apps and whatever. The polar opposite of that, don't we lose something? Because I warned you that it's weird. I'm going the whole other opposite direction. I've been reading Teddy Roosevelt's biography, or a biography of Teddy Roosevelt called The Rise of Teddy Roosevelt. And I mean, it's this tome, it's this huge volume that is almost exclusively based on his and other people's diaries. So these are enormously permanent volumes that they were documenting. It's like a diary was the blog prior to digital. And these were things that were kept for historical record so that someone over 100 years later can understand one of the great leaders of history, in America at least. And that's something, are we going to have the tweet streams and Facebook profiles of future presidents? And is there, aren't we losing some significant value by not having those things?
So, yeah, I think this, I mean, this is pretty broad, but there's a couple of things I think that's quite different to, you know, the Teddy Roosevelt example. One is like the amount of content that we're creating now is just like so much larger that the
less in depth
that the historical value of that probably, you know, for a single piece of content reduces. So there are, you know, probably millions upon millions of tweets every day that people are flying, you know, throwing out there, because now we have the ability just to create this huge amount of content. You know, the amount of video that is uploaded to YouTube, I think, surpasses the amount of video that's watched on YouTube. So we have like so much data now that I don't really know. I think that just like lowers the value of the, you know, keeping it, because who's going to watch it anyway, or who's going to be there to look at it. For like specific kind of like looking, crawling back through stuff, oh, this is the moment where X, Y, Z happens for historical reasons, like I can kind of see it for that. But I just think broadly speaking, we're all kind of so focused on what is the latest piece of content today and reading that, that we don't really have the time to look at older stuff. And I think that's why something like Snapchat is really quite, you know, popularly taken off. It's just like, now you don't have to worry about it. You take it, it's going to be gone. It doesn't matter. You can move on. We're like, you know, there's a huge march forward, really, in terms of us using the internet and creating content and throwing everything up on Facebook. And, you know, nobody's looking at all these old photos.
So the creators don't want it to be permanent.
Perhaps not. And I think like the super, like, I don't know, I'm speaking out of my comfort zone a little bit, but it seems the trend of journalism is like moving a lot from, you know, more in-depth long form stuff to much more kind of, I guess like very current, like this is the latest chunk of content for right now. Now we're going to write another one in a few hours and it's going to be kind of different. And it's like keep updating, keep churning kind of approach rather than much more considered long pieces. And that's why maybe there's just like not the same value that the New York Times used to think that they had for their content 15 years ago, rather than the content that they're publishing on their blogs now, just has an inherently kind of different approach to what is that content actually for and how are they kind of measuring the success from it.
Yeah, I guess it just worries me that we're going to like have this mass of information and this historical record. And there are so few organizations and people intent on maintaining it for the long term, and that we're going to lose it. One of my favorite people on Twitter is Andrew Kaczynski. He's a BuzzFeed like researcher, basically, mm-hmm. for politics. And every now and then, he'll just retweet something Donald Trump tweeted like 4 years ago. And he's obviously dug through and somehow archived Donald Trump's tweets, and in ways like hold him accountable when he contradicts those things now. And that's obviously a Twitter or Snapchat style example of maintaining a historical record of something. But there is a larger application. Like, you know, we have historically, like we have record of people's diaries or newspaper articles and things like that. In the future, I mean, right now, for instance, it wouldn't surprise anyone if some old LiveJournal post or MySpace post completely went off the web and went away. Mm-hmm. That's happened with smaller platforms over and over again. So isn't there some power in the open concept of the web where it's possible to archive and maintain records of web content? Or am I just like an old curmudgeon in saying that that's valuable?
I mean, I'm sure that it is valuable. I think that it is also. The question is, for me, is like just because it is valuable doesn't make everybody act in that way and care about those things in the aggregate. And I see like it seems more likely to me that everything is speeding up. It's just unless there was some incredibly swimming against the current kind of effort to slow that all down and like be like more concerted about how are we going to make sure this content is available longer term and how do we not have private platforms going down and losing all of this historical data and things like that, then unfortunately it's just a side effect of the prolific internet that we have, where data is just becoming much more transient than maybe it has done in the past. And we might just, in 20 years, maybe it's just kind of accepted that all of those things we do disappear. Just like right now, when we speak to each other anywhere that isn't recorded, then those things disappear broadly. And maybe just like our view of how that is, similar to how it has done with things like privacy since Facebook, and thus has changed like our view of how worried people are about those things, maybe that is more likely to shift than us somehow collectively coming together and kind of like being more conservative about how throwaway we're being with a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, I guess it's an argument of how valuable is the web and the history of it. There, I wish I could. I know we got off topic and we're almost done, but I wish I could remember who it is. I think it might be Jeremy Keith who's taken a big stand on this, but it might be someone else. It's someone web famous that has really gotten into the concept of like archiving the web and trying to ensure that we don't lose what's happened on the web. I guess I think that's important. And if I were one of these publishers making a decision of where to put my content, that's one of the things that would worry me about a platform, like a hosted platform like Medium. However, that's probably for the vast minority of all content publishers online that's even a concern. Like, much bigger of a concern is how easy is this to use and how much does it cost? And
right. I think the primary selection criteria, like of how successful these new media companies that are bubbling up all the time is going to be things like how much traffic they're getting, how much engagement, how much they can leverage paid content and advertising and things. The maybe more noble goal of we want to, control
preserve
this.
The record.
Right. In an evolutionary sense, that is not a trait that is going to be rewarded in the short term for your kind of success. So I'm skeptical whether... That's going to catch on, I guess. But I definitely like for it to. I think it's a noble effort to archive everything that is goes onto the internet and that kind of thing. I'm just not convinced, I guess, that is going to be stable.
Yeah, I guess I do think though that's probably a pretty typical viewpoint that. People that make the web, especially in open source communities like WordPress, something they value. So I guess that's our battle to fight as promoters of open source software. That right. one of its big benefits is for preserving the web, but that doesn't mean that the threat of platforms like Medium and other proprietary platforms isn't there, and that we can. Obviously learn from the experience of those platforms. So I think one of the things I'd like to close with would be that I feel like we should be careful in terms of, kind of poo-pooing, in a sense, platforms that don't follow by our moral standards or whatever you want to call that, and be willing to take hints from some of what they've learned and evolved in terms of creating rich editing experiences. And I feel like one of the big threats to WordPress would be to not iterate and be bold, I guess, with our willingness to change and evolve the publishing experience to continue to improve it and make it easier. And I think it's our responsibility to work hard on making publishing simple, because it, in the end, helps WordPress be better and helps maintain a web for the long term, or an open web for the long term.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think separating the political side, I guess, of what Medium's motivations are and what it values and what it is trying to do from the experience that it is creating is only going to be a good thing, just to learn from those things that it's kind of innovating on.
Cool. Well, there you have it. That's Medium versus WordPress in a nutshell. And I guess also, you know, some of the things that we can learn from Medium and other closed platforms, if you will. Joe, where can people find you?
I am on Twitter, Joe_Hoyle, which is my Twitter follower account is significantly boosted since my WordCamp Europe talk.
So really?
It went okay.
Oh, congratulations. And are you gonna tweet more than...
I'm thinking I should probably come up with a tweeting strategy of some kind.
It's your responsibility now.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot of people out there ready to get a tweet in their Twitter stream from me. So
that's right. They're just on their toes.
Exactly.
All right. We'll go to postass.com for more, and we'll talk to you all next time.
Thanks.